The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
It's also fascinating what we're hearing from officials specifically. I want to play what Governor Hochul had to say. Take a listen.
Get them all and send them back. You don't touch our police officers. You don't touch anybody. Thank you, everybody.
I mean, we're hearing a change when it comes to immigration in general from President Biden on down.
What should New Yorkers make of the fact that most of the people involved in this attack are migrants?
But those who are breaking our laws, we need to reexamine the laws that don't allow us to deport them because they're doing violent acts. We cannot create an atmosphere where you're going to bring violence in our city.
You have one singular photo that tells you everything about the basic nature of human behavior. That is, they disrespect you because they can. They disrespect you because you're weak. What you're seeing right there is how far we've gone down this path. There's no disincentives. There's no consequences. Land, it's the land of the free for criminals.
These individuals, I went over their rap sheets yesterday, multiple charges, grand larceny, robbery, attempted robbery, grand larceny. This particular crew operated on mopeds and scooters. They were doing organized retail theft. They were doing snatches on the street, iPhones, iPads, clothing, so on and so forth. One of them that they are still seeking has 10 charges on one day because he's part of a pattern that's been going on. And I'm looking at the dates that their arrest started, which is probably close to when they got here. They've only been here a couple of months. So what the detectives are telling me is they have crews here that operate in New York, do all their stealing, then go to Florida to spend the money, and then come back. And I'm like, well, why don't they just stay and steal in Florida? And they said, because there you go to jail.
Oh.
Now, this used to house folks that were coming, kids that wanted to come in for classes, basketball. You got the swimming as well. But unfortunately, they're not able to do that. Earlier this morning, we spoke to an outraged mom who says she has four kids, and they're not going to be able to use this anymore. Watch.
We want to help them, but at the same time, what about us that need help here? What about, you know, I'm a mother and I have four children. You know, they need help. They need somewhere to go. They need something to do.
What's going to be the consequence of this being changed and just to migrants? Where are those kids going to go right now?
Probably to the streets. To the streets where most of them are already at. You know, like when we look for help, it seems like the state and the governor and them people, they push us away.
As that mom said, they have pushed the community away for the folks housed inside of this building. If we could pull that photo up one more time, this is what's happening here. And everyone is saying that is looking on this at a national level, guys, because this is our third stop on the tour. And it's happening in Denver, it's happening in Chicago, and now here in Boston. Will the president wake up on this issue? Will the border czar Kamala Harris wake up on this issue and reverse the sanctuary cities, guys?
So for any Republicans who want to continue to try to keep battering the economy, yes, life is expensive. You can't argue that. This is a strong economy. That's one of the reasons you see them pivoting so hard to immigration. They just can't keep beating on the economy.
Look, his rise amongst people of color, African Americans and Hispanics, it's because they are following white working class voters, what they did with Reagan and Trump in 2016. They're moving towards Trump because of his policies. They're not big fans of Democratic wokeness and the like. And so I think you're going to see that slide continue to the Republican Party.
African Americans under age 40, male African Americans, are moving further and further towards Donald Trump, not the Republican Party, but towards Trump. The Latino vote, the most critical vote in America, roughly 20% of the population. For the first time, polling now has them supporting Donald Trump. Make no mistake, young voters at this point have left the current president because they don't think he has the energy. But Andrew, make no mistake, Joe Biden is the weakest incumbent in America since Jimmy Carter in 1980. And don't forget, on the Thursday before the election, Carter was dead even with Ronald Reagan. After their one debate, Reagan beat Jimmy Carter by 9 points. This is a look into the future.
A look into the future. I like how Stephanie Ruhle says that the economy is just so, it's so fantastic that President Biden's opponents, they're having to turn to illegal immigration. It's all that they have left. For one, isn't it amazing how the regime media millionaires love, they absolutely love Bidenomics. And then they still, even though the whole country is paying attention to it, they still look at the illegal immigration, the unrestricted illegal immigration, as something that's not really a very big problem at all. It's just a Republican talking point. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. Can't believe it's Friday, the last show of the workday week. You can get to this live stream at trumpetdaily.com or at the Rumble channel, rumble.com. Just go to rumble.com/trumpetdaily, and you can leave us the thumbs up and leave us some feedback. If you'd prefer to email the feedback, you can do that by sending a message to td@thetrumpet.com. A lot to get to on today's show. It's Friday. That means we've got the Friday segment of World Watch. That's coming up in the second segment. And then also, we're going to talk about Iran. This report coming from Politico. Probably not as noticed as it should be, but you'll remember earlier in the week we talked about how the attack on that U.S. position in Jordan, killing three of our servicemen, all of them African-Americans. We talked about how that this really puts the dear leader in a difficult position because ideologically, I mean, he's perfectly aligned with the mullahs in Iran. They are his allies, the way Barack Obama looks at it. And so there was all the talk early in the week. Yeah, we're going to answer back at a time and place of our choosing. Tough talk from John Kirby. And now you get this report saying, you know what? I don't think Tehran is, I don't think they're really pushing the buttons of these proxies that they have throughout the Middle East. I don't know. The U.S. intel community, right? The deep state, the same deep state that told you Hunter's laptop was Russian disinformation. They're now telling you that Iran is not responsible. So there you go. Probably little or no response coming from Joe Biden, coming from Barack Obama after that attack on the U.S. position in Jordan. Pretty amazing development. We'll get to that a little bit later on. But as you heard there in that cold open, I mean, who was it? Gutfeld, I think it was, said that they do this. They come across the country illegally, and then they defiantly shake their fist at you or attack your law enforcement officials. They do this because they can. They do this because they know that you're weak. This is why Iran can fire a drone at a U.S. position and kill U.S. servicemen because they know there's not going to be any response. They know that the deep state will come along a few days later and say, well, now we can't really blame Iran. We certainly don't want a conflict with Iran. They do it because they know they can. They do it because they know you're weak. This guy, he's attacking a police officer in New York City, and he's let go without bail. I mean, no bail, nothing. He just walks right out the same day. And he's flipping off the entire country. He's 22, it says at the New York Post. He took time to flip the double bird as he strolled out of the Manhattan criminal court following his arraignment on charges of assaulting a police officer and obstructing governmental administration for Saturday's caught-on-camera beating. I didn't do anything, he said in Spanish. Boda was the fifth accused cop attacker sprung on the bail-eligible rap, something NYPD Chief of Patrol John Chell ripped as reprehensible earlier Wednesday. This is reprehensible, he says. If you're an elderly woman, strolling through the Capitol on January 6th, well, you're going to have to sit in jail and listen to the regime media talk about how much you hate law enforcement, how much you nearly overturned the government of the United States. But if you come into the country illegally, if you attack law enforcement officials, well, you're just let go. You're let go right back onto the streets. You can see why blacks, Hispanics, all of Americans, as you heard at the end of that cold open, you can see why they're turning to not just Republicans, to Trump. Because Trump campaigns on the fact that he's going to secure the border. He's going to close the border. This is in the New York Times, what I'm about to read to you. It's amazing that they're even covering this. But it shows just how bad the problem. Never mind what Stephanie Ruhle says, that it's just a talking point. If the New York Times is writing about how massive this problem is, you know it's got to be pretty bad. It says here, for decades, single young men, mainly from Mexico and later Central America, did their best to sneak past U.S. border agents to reach Los Angeles, Atlanta, or other places hungry for labor. Today, people from around the globe are streaming across the southern border. They're coming from all over the world. The New York Times confirms it. Most of them just eager to work. Well, we don't know so much about that. But rather than trying to elude U.S. authorities, the overwhelming majority of migrants seek out border agents, sometimes waiting hours or days in makeshift encampments to surrender. They're looking for U.S. authorities because their job, and this comes straight from the dear leader, Barack Hussein Obama, their job is to escort the illegals in, show them their way and pay for it. All expenses paid to New York City. And then they could even attack police officers and not even get punished for it. Welcome to America, the land of the free for the criminals, as Gutfeld said. It says being hustled into a U.S. Border Patrol vehicle and taken to a processing facility is hardly a setback, says the New York Times. In fact, it's a crucial step toward being able to apply for asylum. You've got to find the border security guys. I mean, this shows what a farce it is for the Biden people to even talk like they're securing the border. They're trying to prevent Texas, the National Guard in Texas, from doing exactly that because they want, what did Kirby say? Well, they've got to get in there to do their work, to help people through. And that's what they're doing. Imagine that, illegals coming across the border looking for U.S. law enforcement. Let's see. Where are the border security agents? I gotta get apprehended by one of them so that I'm seen as legit. We're living in an era of mass migration. And then, of course, it wouldn't be the New York Times if it didn't blame it on climate change. So we'll leave that aside. It says here, and encouraged by proliferation of TikTok and YouTube videos chronicling migrants' journeys to the U.S., some 6 million Venezuelans have fled their troubled country, the largest population displacement in Latin America's modern history. 6 million, just from Venezuela. Where do you suppose they're going? You think they're migrating to Nicaragua or Mexico? They're coming to America, millions of them. Migrants from Africa, Asia, and South America are mortgaging their family land, selling their cars, or borrowing money from loan sharks to embark on long, often treacherous journeys to reach the United States. That's right. In December, it was 300,000. That's a medium-sized city in the United States. 300,000 in 1 month alone, the month of December. It says here, finally, it's not just because they believe they will be able to make it across the 2,000-mile southern frontier. They are also certain that once they make it to the United States, they will be able to stay forever. And by and large, they are not wrong. That my friends, is the New York Times. How bad is this curse if even the New York Times is acknowledging they're coming by the millions, and they're coming because they know if they get in, they're going to stay. They're going to stay. And so no wonder, as Frank Luntz pointed out in that montage, no wonder African Americans, Hispanics, all of them, they're turning to Donald Trump in droves. Even though the regime media is still out there spewing the propaganda, saying Biden is perfectly sane, he's clear-headed, he's never been better, and it's Donald Trump, of course. That's the crazy one, because he got Nikki Haley, I guess, confused with Nancy Pelosi for just one statement. But because of that, he's done. He's finished. He's mentally challenged. He certainly can't serve another term as president. Biden, for sure. He had the prayer breakfast yesterday, by the way, and caught some flack on social media because he ended up cursing in the middle of all these religious people that had gathered to enjoy the prayer breakfast with him. Listen to the fake president here. This is clip 8.
My prayer for all of you in my church, we've taken the 22nd Psalm and turned it into a hymn. It says, and he will raise you up on eagle's wings and bear you on the breath of dawn and make you to shine like the sun. Until we meet again, may God hold you in the palm of his hand. That's sincerely my prayer to all of you. We have really tough, tough differences. We really go at one another. But remember, let's remember who the hell we are.
Okay, both sides engage in, you know, inappropriate, ungodly, coarse language. I mean, it's a sign of the times. It says in Isaiah 3, God's, you know, taken away the real eloquent leaders. And so you see this kind of thing all the time. But the fact that it was at a prayer breakfast, I mean, quite a few people said, what? At a prayer? And then, of course, the regime media, they rush to the microphone to tell you that, hey, he is known for a lot of profanity, particularly behind closed doors, and especially when the subject of Trump comes up. And you know what? It just shows how human he is. It shows, it makes him relatable. He's just like you. Listen to the morning meltdown as they defend his angry outbursts, his profanity-laden outbursts against Donald Trump. This is clip 1.
But I think it's sort of a well-known secret, if you will, here in Washington, that President Biden is pretty salty behind closed doors. He does have a quick temper. He's first to admit that. And he's pretty profane at times when he's fired up about something. And certainly he is about Donald Trump. And that's what people over and over told me, that of course, I mean, Biden was horrified by Trump's actions, you know, during the 2016 campaign and during his presidency. But in his post-presidency, even more so, the way Trump has treated these criminal trials, what we have heard from him about E. Jean Carroll, everything connected to the insurrection, the warm words for Putin after the invasion, you know, praising Hezbollah for being smart over and over and over. Biden just feels that Trump is unfit for office. And I'm told his pure loathing of the person, not just the politician, but the person of Donald Trump, has only grown.
He's profane, but, you know, that just shows he's fired up, right? He's just really passionate. Just really feels strongly about something. In this case, Trump. I mean, his hatred for Trump is increased even since Trump left office. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing that he's a little salty with his language. Listen to Joe on Morning Meltdown, clip 2.
One reason why the White House probably should let him out more. There's been concerns that he's not getting out, he's not doing enough stuff, he's not answering enough questions. All right, so if he makes a mistake, he makes a mistake. Like, you know, Andy Card told Barnacle one time that the thing that people didn't get about Bush was when he bumbled around and wasn't perfect, wasn't Ronald Reagan. I'm talking about 43. And he said it made him more relatable.
Yeah.
And some of the polls that made him more, he wasn't speaking in flowery language. Like, people felt like, okay, yeah, he's one of us. Well, that's Biden. So let Fox News make fun of him because he has the same stutter he had since he was 14 years old. But go out and show flashes of anger.
Yeah, show flashes of anger. Why not? Why not? Now Trump can't do that. If he shows anger, he's unhinged. He's Hitler. He's Hitler. If Biden shows anger, he's relatable. So here are the rules set forth by the Morning Meltdown. If Biden does it, if he curses, if he flips off into an angry tirade, he's just relatable. If Trump does it, how can we ever forget clavicles talking about Trump throwing the plate in the White House and ketchup? Ketchup was just sliding down the wall. And this was, this was a sign of everything that's wrong with the bad orange man. If he's angry, it's because he's dangerous. That's right. He's dangerous. Listen to the Morning Meltdown as they talk about Donald Trump's anger. A little bit of a different tone when it comes to that. Clip 5.
The angry freakouts seem to provide a window into Trump's psyche, into the way Donald Trump thinks about himself. Right now, we're awaiting a ruling from the D.C. appeals court over Trump's claim that he should have absolute immunity for anything he did or said as president. And that claim of immunity is more than just a legal defense. It would seem to be an almost explicit statement about how Trump thinks about his relationship to the rule of law, namely that he's not bound by it. He can do and say and throw whatever he wants, even ketchup.
Even ketchup. There you go. Speaking of that case in the D.C. court, this just broke minutes before we went live. This is Sundance on President Trump's special counsel election interference case in D.C. has been suspended indefinitely. This was the one that was supposed to start at the end of March. Trump's lawyers have claimed, as you heard there, that he has immunity. And the court has basically said, all right, it's suspended. There's no way we can get this in as quickly as Jack Smith wants it. Sundance says, in the ridiculous federal election interference case in D.C., President Trump's attorneys argued to the D.C. Circuit Appellate Court that President Trump holds inherent constitutional immunity. It says, in essence, because President Trump was acquitted by the Senate of claims he incited or instigated the January 6, 2021 events, lawyers arguing under the Constitution that only impeached and removed presidents can be criminally prosecuted. It says the initial three-judge panel of the court has taken up the appeal, and all subsequent lower court activity was suspended until the constitutional issue is resolved. So you can see, they're having to throw all their eggs now in the E. Jean Carroll basket. Or now Alvin Bragg. The craziest lawsuits of all. And they'll probably get convictions. Well, E. Jean Carroll, she secured $83 million for what? For Donald Trump basically saying she was a whack job. That's what they got him for. It wasn't for rape. This is lawfare on steroids. Listen to this one from The Spectator. I'm an unlikely defender of Donald Trump. Politically, he's not my boy. Most of the former president's hyperbolic rants make me cringe. So here's a never-Trumper saying, yet last week I had to agree with Donald Trump that a jury's award of $83 million of his assets to E. Jean Carroll for defamation was absolutely ridiculous. See, people that are honest scholars or attorneys, they know just how ridiculous all of this is. And so now they'll push everything hard for the Alvin Bragg case. Again, in Manhattan, you get the New York jury. They're in lockstep with juries in D.C. It's like 90% blue, as dark blue as you could get. Is he going to get a fair trial? That's what this author here titles his piece. Is there such a thing as a fair Trump trial? Is there such a thing as fairness when it comes to Donald Trump? He curses, he's Hitler. You see? You see how it works? If he goes to jail, I think they were asking for like $10 million. The jury gets together and says, you know what? I think $10 million is a little too low. Let's give her $83 million. How about that? Keeping track of all the cases against Trump can be challenging. So let's review. In 2019, here's a good summary of this sham of a case. In 2019, while Trump was still president, Carroll went public with the accusation that back in 1995, or was it 96? She doesn't even know. He raped her in the lingerie dressing room of Manhattan's upscale clothing retailer, Bergdorf Goodman. Trump denied the encounter had ever occurred and claimed he'd never met the woman. She was totally lying, and besides, she was not his type, said Trump. Previously an advice columnist for Elle magazine, Carroll sued Trump for defamation, the case soon getting bogged down by appeals. And then in 2022, with the help, I might add, with the help of the New York legislature that added this little statute, just a 12-month window to go back to, you know, the mid-1990s if you have to get somebody for rape. The jury didn't buy the rape charge, but did find Trump liable for the lesser sexual abuse, awarding her $5 million. When she continued to publicly allude to the rape, Trump filed a defamation countersuit. The same hardly neutral judge threw the countersuit out on the grounds that, to ordinary people, rape and sexual abuse were the same thing. I beg to defer, says the author. So Trump, when he files the countersuit claim, that, look, you've defamed me. The judge throws that out right away. Just throws it out right. Listen to this story I'm bouncing around. This is from NBC. It's about Trump filed a case in the UK against Christopher Steele's group or organization over there. I forget the name. But basically, he says, look, you defamed me. You came up with this Trump-Russia collusion hoax. And I had to put up with 3 years of persecution because of it. It undermined my presidency, so I'm going to sue you. Well, guess what happens in the UK? It's the same over there as it is here. Lawfare, it goes in one direction and one direction only. A judge in London on Thursday threw out a lawsuit by former U.S. President Donald Trump that accused a former British spy of making shocking and scandalous claims that were false and harmed his reputation. Judge Karen Stein said the case Trump filed against Orbis Business Intelligence should be dismissed. There are no compelling reasons to allow the claim to proceed to trial. No compelling reasons, says this judge, says Karen. No compelling reasons. Yet the fact that the Steele dossier was filled with lies, intended to undermine the most powerful man in the world, no defamation there, no problem there. Look, free press, right? Free press. The press has to have their rights to promote lies even. So the judge just throws it out, just like the judge throughout Donald Trump's counterclaim. That's the way it works. This is back to the Spectator piece. Is there such a thing as a fair Trump trial? It says here, Trump kept denying his culpability in rallies and on social media, calling Carroll a whack job. Carroll resumed her defamation suit and won. Her lawyers were asking for a minimum damages of $10 million. After conferring for under 3 hours, the jury awarded her $83 million. So there you go. Sounds like a fair and just system, doesn't it? They throw Donald Trump's suits, the ones he brings forward, they throw them out. They throw them out right away. No, nobody can expect, you know, to argue that you were defamed by the Steele dossier. So just throw it out and move on. Meanwhile, the lawfare aimed at Donald Trump, it's never ending. says here, in January's defamation trial, Trump was forbidden from disputing or attempting to undermine the original sexual abuse conviction. While outside the courtroom, he may continue to deny that the assault happened. He may not disparage Carroll's character. This is what the judge said. As the New York Times summarized, defending yourself against an accusation is not the same as debasing the person who is making it. But that's splitting hairs, says the Spectator. To deny the assault happened is implicitly to call Carroll a liar, thus implicitly to defame her character. You know, what do you expect him to do? He denies the charges. It never happened. He doesn't know the woman. Is he supposed to come out and say, you know what? I disagree with her position, but she's a very nice woman. From what I know about her, she seems respectable. She loves law and order. She's said some nice tweets about me in the past. She's told her followers that she's a really big fan of The Apprentice. So I really congratulate her. Is that the way anyone would respond to a lie from 30 years ago? He responds like you know you would respond by saying, no, that didn't happen. She's a liar. She's a liar. She's lying. But you see, just like the case of the 22-year-old from Venezuela coming in and pummeling one of our law enforcement officers, just like with Iran, you know, the fact that they know there's not going to be any response in return, they continue to carry out all of this criminal activity because they can, because they can get away with it, because they know that America is weak. Speaking of Iran, here's that Politico report. I mean, this is just stunning. I mean, this shows you how the communists have taken over. This is Politico saying intelligence officials have calculated that Tehran does not have full control over its proxy groups in the Middle East, including those responsible for attacking and killing U.S. troops in recent weeks. The Quds Force, an elite branch of Iran's Revolutionary Guard Corps, is responsible for sending weapons and military advisors, as well as intelligence to support militias in Iraq and Syria, as well as the Houthis in Yemen. The groups have varying ambitions and agendas, which sometimes overlap, but Tehran does not appear to have complete authority over their operational decision-making, the officials said. So Iran doesn't have complete authority. So Joe Obama doesn't have to fire back missiles in response. Just let Iran do what it wants to do. They're not officially in charge of the Houthis or Hamas or Hezbollah. It says, while the disclosure means it may be particularly hard to predict what actions these groups will take, it also could lower the chance of the U.S. getting pulled into a direct confrontation with Iran. Well, thank you, Deep State. The Deep State has been able to dial it back. Just let Iran kill a few U.S. service members, even if they're black, African American. Just let them kill them. We won't respond because we can always fall back on the intelligence, which tells us that Iran isn't directly involved. It doesn't oversee all the operations of these terrorist proxy groups. Listen to this one from the other day. This is John Bolton. We obviously have played some clips of him in recent months where he's itching to get into a war in just about any situation that he can. A lot of people in Washington are, to keep this military-industrial complex moving. You know, it's billions and billions of dollars coming into this every year. But on this point, you know, he makes some sense, particularly with the way Iran is operating. Clip 7.
I think right now Iran is not paying any price for anything that's happening in the region. And until they begin to pay a price, they will simply continue to push.
That got our attention, obviously, because of what it says in Daniel 11 and verse 40, that the king of the south That would be the Iran-led Islamist movement in the South pushing at the King of the North. And they're doing it. They're doing it with the attacks on these trade vessels going through the Red Sea. And now just a blatant attack on American forces. And here's Barack Obama to say, hey, his deep state to say, hey, it's not really Iran directly. So don't worry. You know, we don't have to escalate this conflict. Just let them kill a few U.S. soldiers from here, you know, here and there. That's no problem. This is in our King of the South booklet. Again, just coming back to what Bolton said there at the end. They will keep doing what they're doing. They'll keep pushing because they're never held to account. Just like this illegal alien. He's let out of jail the same day. He's flipping America the double bird. That's what he thinks about the United States. In the King of the South, my father says that the king is going to push at the King of the North, probably from its trade route power. That push will be a dramatic act of war. The Holy Roman Empire will respond with an all-out whirlwind attack, and Iran and radical Islam will fall immediately. I mean, that's just projecting ahead to where these events are leading. But it says here, Arab-Iranian control over the Mediterranean Sea and the Red Sea could be the real reason the U.S. is not involved in the Mideast war in Daniel 11. I mean, by the time Daniel 11 is fulfilled, I mean, the U.S. is out of the picture. And Europe has to take matters into its own hands and come against the King of the South as a whirlwind surrounding the King of the South, crushing that pushy King of the South. That's what's prophesied. Iran has a foreign policy with a lot of push. It also means to wage war. Push is a violent word. This push, no doubt, revolves around Jerusalem and biblical Judah. It's a very pushy foreign policy. We saw it play out last weekend when they killed 3 U.S. soldiers and injured dozens more. And now Barack Obama, who's ideologically aligned with the mullahs in Tehran, says that, you know what, they aren't really responsible, so we'll give them a pass this time around. Yesterday in the morning brief, you may have read from Richard Palmer about the Biden government. He says that they may be planning one of its greatest betrayals of Israel yet, recognizing a Palestinian state. Secretary of State Blinken has asked the State Department to present him with ways of making it work, Axios reported. U.S. officials claim there have been no policy changes, but the U.S. has opposed recognition of a separate Palestinian state for decades, insisting it can only happen through negotiation with Israel. Some inside the Biden administration are now thinking recognition of the Palestinian state should possibly be the first step in the negotiations to resolve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict instead of the last step. So now here you have, you know, speaking of push, here you have the dear leader pushing Israel to back off in its counteroffensive and actually pushing forward now a Palestinian state. I mean, just think of it. On October 7th, just a few months ago, the Palestinians of Gaza, Hamas, they, and with the help of UNRWA, by the way, this UN agency that really should be declared a terrorist organization, but we'll leave that aside for a moment. Hamas attacks Israel, invades Israel, rapes, pillages, murders Jews in the south of Israel. And what is the United States pushing for just a few months later? Well, give them a state. What kind of a message does this send to the mullahs in Iran or to the Hamas terrorists in Gaza? Well, hey, if we terrorize these people, they'll give us what we want. They'll give us what we want and then some. How stupid and naive could we be to appease people that want to kill, murder, rape, beat up police officers? And on it goes, as I said yesterday. I mean, look at how far we're willing to go to protect the freedom, the rights, the everything of just common criminals, thugs, gang members, terrorist states. It really does show, doesn't it, that America is under attack, that we're in the midst of a frightening, fundamental transformation of the United States. When we come back, we've got the World Watch segment for the week, as well as a short Bible study segment to conclude today's show. You are listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
In 1994, Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Fleury asked, "Is Iraq about to fall to Iran?" It was a bold statement at the time, but over the next 20 years, this forecast became reality. Today, Iran is the undisputed king in the Middle East. In the early 1990s, we identified Iran as the prophesied king of the south. In the book of Daniel, it says this king of the south will push against the king of the north. These prophecies are being fulfilled before our eyes. To learn more about these incredible prophecies, request your free copy of The King of the South. This booklet examines the history and current events of the Middle East under the light of Bible prophecy. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com.
Iran is poised to become president of the United Nations Conference on Disarmament, the UN announced on January 18th. The Conference on Disarmament leads the negotiation of nuclear disarmament deals and other weapons treaties. However, Iran is the world's number one sponsor of terrorism and is illegally arming itself with nuclear weapons. The International Atomic Energy Agency cautioned last year that Iran has likely enriched enough uranium to build several nuclear warheads. The UN has repeatedly made similarly absurd appointments and elections, including electing China to the Human Rights Council panel in 2020 and appointing North Korea to the World Health Organization in 2023. Although the United Nations is intended to bring peace to the world, it has no power to prevent the coming world crisis. To learn more about the real causes of war and peace, read We Have Had Our Last Chance. Turkey's legislature ratified Sweden's application to the North Atlantic Treaty Organization on January 24th. Once Hungary also ratifies Sweden's membership bid, Sweden will become the alliance's 32nd member state. Sweden and Finland announced their bids in 2022 in the wake of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Finland joined last spring, but Sweden still has yet to join. All current NATO members must give their approval before a new state can join, and Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has been stalling until Sweden made some concessions. Despite being a NATO member and ostensibly a democracy, Turkey has cultivated close ties with Russia. But Erdogan also has close links with Europe. Despite the Ukraine war, Erdogan has maintained his diplomatic balancing act. But approving Sweden's NATO bid is a major snub to Russia. Erdogan's decision shows he values military cooperation with Europe and will work to strengthen it. The Trumpet expects the Turkish-European partnership to grow stronger in the days to come. To learn why, read Turkey Leans Away from Russia and Toward Europe. After 110 years in operation, the Panama Canal is running dry. Although the canal connects the world's two largest oceans, the water supply that operates the lock system comes from Gatun Lake. The 20-year drought currently afflicting Panama has dropped the lake's water levels, forcing Panamanian authorities to slash ship crossings by 36% in one of the world's most important trade routes. The Panama Canal handles 3% of world trade and 16% of U.S. trade. A bottleneck would drive up prices around the world. The drought also has national security implications for the U.S. Since the canal opened in 1914, America has relied on it to move military vessels from its east coast to its west coast and vice versa. At one time, America and Britain controlled virtually every maritime choke point on the planet, a blessing that God promised to the modern descendants of Abraham. But God also warned that if these nations did not obey him, those sea gates would be taken away and used against them. To learn more about this prophecy, read The Rise and Fall of a Superpower by Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flurry. To learn more about current world news and how it relates to Bible prophecy, please visit thetrumpet.com.
Just to put the finishing touches on a study that we had going for a few programs last week, we were talking about just the importance of concentration and focus. And when you think about what we're aiming for spiritually, the end goal, as Matthew 5:48 says, is perfection. And of course, we're a good ways away from that. We've got a lot of work to do to get to that point of being perfect, like our Father in heaven is perfect. And I mean, this really does show just how important it is for us to really pursue that perfect goal daily and to make sure that we are making, you know, progress day in and day out. Your Bible says, seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and then all these things will be added unto you. That's in Matthew 6:33. That word seek means to diligently pursue after. You've got to show some diligence to really go after God's way of life, to really pursue God's truth, to pursue obedience, commandment keeping, and so on. These are a few practical points to help you, to help me with our concentration and our focus. For one, set daily and weekly goals. Put those goals to paper so that you can see them, so that you can be reminded of them. We were talking in one of our forums, one of the students brought up the fact that, you know, while most of the day's activities are pretty well set with respect to classes and then going off to work and so on, at night, you know, that's when, you know, it's his time. And when he has to manage his time with his studies and other things. And so a to-do list is valuable for him for those moments. It may not be that we need one for the entire, you know, 14, 15, 16 hours that we're awake. But there's probably a pretty good chance that with the evening or on Sundays or something like that, that a to-do list would be quite valuable to help you just keep you're focused. This is from the Seven Laws of Success book. Mr. Armstrong wrote this. It was one of his most popular booklets back in the day. He said, you must make the decision. You must set the right goal. You must set your will. You must expend your full effort. You must work at overcoming, growing, and developing spiritually and sticking with it. It says, yet God supplies the all-important ingredient, his power, his love, his faith, his guidance, his life. God supplies that all-important ingredient, which is the Holy Spirit of God. And we receive that after repentance and faith and then baptism and the laying on of hands. And we receive a power boost from the Spirit of God. But as Romans 8 brings out, the Spirit's not going to drag you or kick you into the kingdom. It's going to lead you. And so we have to follow. We have to push ourselves to follow in that direction. The second point I have here is to aim for gradual improvement. Don't overwhelm yourself tomorrow morning saying, I've got to change 37 things about me today. Start with one, maybe the big one. Maybe the elephant in the room, really confront it, lay siege to it, as my father says in the Overcomer book. Lay siege to that problem, whether it's weakness or lust or whatever it is, laziness. And then go to work on changing that one thing. And that'll serve as a pretty good trigger to bring about changes in other areas of your life as well. Another way to help improve your concentration and focus is to stop multitasking. God is, as 1 Corinthians 14 says, God is the author of order and peace. So there's organization and structure to all that God does. Now God, because he's God, he's able to multitask. But study after study after study shows that human beings don't operate this way. We have to concentrate and focus on one task at a time. Bring all of the focus that you can to that one task, and then when it's done and you can mark it off the to-do list, you move on to the next task. We make a mistake, though, when we try to do everything at once. Nothing really gets done well, not the way that it should be. That kind of follows in with this next point that I have, in that you should try to slow down, you know. We had a church fast recently, and one of the best things about a fast is that you just slow everything down. You turn off all of the distractions. You don't have any work responsibilities that day. You're just focused. You're just concentrating on drawing closer to God. And the pace, although the fast generally goes by fast, but still, when you break it down into those minute-by-minute increments, there is a slowing down that really is healthy. It's good for our concentration, our meditation, our Bible study, our prayer time. Slow down and really let God's Word get through to you. In The Shallows, this is a book by Nicholas Carr, he says, when we go online, we enter an environment that promotes cursory reading, hurried and distracted thinking, and superficial learning. We've grown quite adept at scanning and skimming. And that's not, there's a place for that, I suppose. I certainly have to skim through quite a lot when I'm preparing for this show every morning. But that's not the way we want to operate. Certainly not when we're, you know, sitting down to study God's Word or to read and study the church literature. The next point that I have here, I think this is number 5, schedule time for meditation. Schedule time to think on God's law. Read through and study Psalm 119 and see what the prophet Jeremiah said there about meditating on God's law. Joshua 1 and verse 8 says, "This book of the law shall not depart out of your mouth, but you shall meditate therein day and night." I mean, God had his kings of old actually write out the law by hand. I mean, once you do that, you're just automatically slowing down. That takes time. It takes time to write out the questions and the answers to the correspondence course, which is something that we heartily recommend. It just gives you the time to process that truth. It gives you the time to meditate on what you're writing, even if it takes a while to do so. Schedule time for that meditation. And then the sixth point that I have here is to memorize things. This is a point that our students are very familiar with as they come up to midterms and finals each semester. And they're made to memorize scriptures, the Word of God. That's a wonderful thing. That's really good for concentration and focus. And then lastly here, you have the point on taking mental breaks. We do need time for rest and rejuvenation from time to time. The problem in our society today, of course, is that people just do that only. They're just entertaining themselves. They're seeking pleasures and nothing else, and not really bringing focus and concentration to the things that are most important. Matthew 6 and verse 33 again, it says, "Seek first the kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you." My father wrote some years ago, he said, God's kingdom should be your ultimate success focus. Then you will experience the most joyful and successful life imaginable. That's all we have time for on today's show. We thank you for joining us on today's show. We thank some of you for joining us all week. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll see you next time.